Save big on your Thanksgiving feast, all in the Kroger app.
Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up with your card. Then get a juicy frozen grade A Kroger turkey for 49 cents a pound, limit one with a $25 additional purchase with your card and a digital coupon.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Useful Idiots. I'm Katie Halpert.
I'm Mary Matte. Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for being here. Our website is usefulidiotspodcast.com. Go there to support the show and get bonus content. This week, we have a wonderful interview with Useful Idiots fan favorite Jeffrey Sachs, the professor at Columbia and geopolitical expert, and a great time to talk to him as the Biden administration is going out with a bang. It is vetoing ceasefire resolutions. It is authorizing long-range strikes with U.S. weapons from Ukraine into Russia, and so much more. And Jeffrey Sachs is here to break it all down.
Yeah. Such a great guest. Love talking to him. So should we start the four basic food groups?
Let's do it. Four Democrats suck. There is so much to cover. We're going to try to condense it as much as we can because, as I mentioned, the Biden administration is really trying to make us remember it as it heads off into the sunset by, you know, doing what it's done all along, which is, you know, fuel a disastrous proxy war between Ukraine and Russia and make sure that Israel is allowed to continue carrying out its routine massacres in Gaza and Lebanon. So let's look at the, first fruit of the Biden administration's labor, which is, you know, just recently the Biden administration announced that, you know what, let's let Ukraine launch long-range U.S. missiles into Russia, even though we turned that down before because of the fear that would start World War III. We're leaving here anyway, so yeah, why not? Let's take the gloves off. And this is Russia's response. Early on Thursday morning, Russia launched a long-range missile of its own at Dnipro in Ukraine. And as we're recording this, it's still unclear what type of weapon this was. Was this a intermediate missile? Was this an intercontinental missile? What kind of ballistic missile was this? This was a very dangerous weapon. And some are speculating that Russia launched this to show that it could easily attack Ukraine with nuclear capable missiles, even though this missile itself was not carrying nuclear weapons, thankfully. But this is some of the footage of that missile hitting Ukraine. So there it is. That's the Russian missile hitting Dnipro in Ukraine. And this comes right after, basically, the Biden administration's line was, well, yeah, sure, we're taking this escalatory step of letting Ukraine use ATACMS missiles, which require U.S. involvement to be able to use. That's the other part of this that gets buried. But you know what? We're not worried about Russia escalating because we haven't seen them really put their nuclear weapons into operation. So here, for example, is Lloyd Austin essentially shrugging off Russia's likelihood to retaliate.
We've known for several weeks that they were revamping their policy on the use of nuclear weapons. As I look at what they're doing, and we watch their strategic forces very carefully, I don't see a change in their strategic force posture. And so we'll continue to remain vigilant in this regard. But at this point, I don't see an indication that there's an imminent intent to use nuclear weapons.
Okay, great. So great job. Yes, Russia did not use a nuke in Ukraine. It just launched what appears to be an ICBM, which could carry a nuclear weapon inside Ukraine. And this is the point. You know, I don't think Russia is actually going to use nuclear weapons. First of all, they know that the Biden administration is leaving office anyway, and Trump has promised to end the war, and they're probably waiting to see whether Trump will be any different. Although it's quite possible Trump might even escalate because who knows what Trump will do. But the point is that every time the U.S. approves an escalation in Ukraine, it's Ukraine that pays the price. And that's what we just saw again with Russia using this ICBM. And this is Russia sending a message that whatever Ukraine does to us with however many U.S. weapons it has, we can escalate further. And that was the message of this latest missile. And whether the Biden administration will get that, I don't think so, because they don't care if Ukraine pays the price of their own choices. so long as they can say that they're standing up to Putin.
Yeah, I mean, it's we've made this point before, but it just bears repeating that anyone who actually cared about Ukrainians would not have let this get to this point and would not have sent their errand boy, Boris Johnson, to sabotage peace talks between Putin and Zelensky.
Exactly right. And now we're seeing the consequences in a really scary way. And will this escalate even more? We'll have to wait and see. That's just the state of the world we're in.
The good news is we get to bleed Russia, which,
yeah,
was,
well,
which was our intention, as Lloyd Austin himself said.
Yeah, well, we're bleeding Russia, certainly, of, you know, it has one less ICBM missile, it looks like.
Right.
So I guess, you know, mission accomplished.
Right.
All right, let's turn over to the Middle East, where the Biden administration is also going out by reminding everyone that, you know, even in its final days in office, when there's nothing politically left to lose, if, say, they're scared of AIPAC, it is just, it doesn't care. It's just so committed to helping Israel slaughter people in Gaza and Lebanon. So one new illustration of this is the fact that Bernie Sanders, to his credit, brought up a bill to the Senate to halt arms transfers to Israel. And amazingly, a record number of senators voted to support Bernie Sanders. I mean, not enough, obviously, but the final tally was 19 senators voting for a measure to block further U.S. arms transfers to Israel. That's a record. That's never happened before. So that's somewhat of an achievement. And what did the Biden administration do to this measure? Well, they tried to kill it. And this was their message in trying to convince senators not to vote for it. White House says Democrats who oppose weapons to Israel are aiding Hamas. Okay. So that was the Biden administration on their way out, trying to tell anyone who voted for this measure to halt arms transfers to a genocidal state. If you do that, you are aiming Hamas. And, you know, luckily, the Biden administration can count on continued bipartisan support. Every single Republican senator voted against Bernie Sanders' bill. But 19 Democratic senators, including Bernie Sanders, voted for it. And although it's way too little, way too late, at least it's something. And may that continue.
Yeah. And any senator, any Democrat who didn't vote for that is has blood on their hands. And so congratulations to the 19 who voted the right way, and everyone else who voted the wrong way. You're war criminals.
And the sad thing is that everyone, you know, many of the people who did vote for it also have blood on their hands, because some of these same senators had previously voted for arms transfers to Israel, even though they knew exactly what was going on. And so for them also, this is too little, too late. This is kind of like the Obama administration, when it was leaving office in December 2016, finally didn't veto a UN resolution critical of Israeli settlements. That was like the first time they decided not to veto, but that was also too little, too late. But look, it's important that you did have a record number of people, although it's just 19 senators voting for this. But it speaks to how committed the Biden administration is, that up until the last minute, their last day in office, they are still devoted to genocide.
It's also worth noting that according to Middle East Eye, the White House's pushback is said to have been spearheaded by Chuck Schumer, the Senate's top Democrat and staunch advocate for Israel. Now, what's interesting about that is that's the same senator who addressed the Senate and talked about how terrible Netanyahu was for Israel. But I guess he doesn't mind letting Netanyahu, who he claims is bad for Israel, kill more Palestinians, because he just cares how he affects Israel, not Palestinians.
All right, so that's the Senate. What's happening at the UN Security Council? Well, true to form, the Biden administration is still vetoing resolutions calling for a ceasefire. Here is the latest example of this, a sort of image that will live in infamy because it happens pretty much every single month. The U.S. delegate raising their hand to be the only person in the room to veto a resolution at the UN calling for a ceasefire. That's what we're showing for our audio audience, is a picture of the a U.S. delegate, what's his name, Robert Wood, raising his hand to issue the veto. So that's how the Biden administration is going out. And what does Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor, have to say about all this? You know, is he concerned that his legacy will be defined by his facilitation of mass murder of a defenseless death camp in Gaza, and also the escalation to Lebanon, where Israel has also killed untold numbers of people and destroyed so much civilian infrastructure? Well, Jake Sullivan is proud of what he's done in facilitating Israel's mass murder.
Let me ask a question about legacy. Are you concerned that one of your legacies will be facilitating the way Israel has fought in Gaza that has killed tens of thousands of women and children?
The U.S. has taken a very clear position since this war began, which is that Israel had a right to defend itself after the worst slaughter of Jews since the Holocaust. The U.S. also, over the course of the past year, has made a massive difference in terms of whether there would be widespread famine in Gaza or not widespread famine, in terms of working with the Israelis to try to minimize civilian harm over the course of the months of the conflict. I do believe that us standing up for Israel in its hour of need, at a moment when its enemies were descending upon it, has made a major difference for the good from the perspective of the United States.
So the measure now is we've made a difference in preventing widespread famine, as opposed to just like imminent famine, which has been the warning for a long time now. And people are dying of starvation. In fact, that's why the ICC, the International Criminal Court, has just charged Benjamin Netanyahu and Yoav Gallant with war crimes, including for the crime of imposing forced starvation. And so Sullivan is proud of his role in that. And if it's not as if we needed more evidence of why Sullivan and Blinken and Biden should be also prosecuted for war crimes. That's it right there, because he's bragging about his role in Israel's assault on Gaza. He's proud of it. He's bragging about it. And that's how they're leaving office.
What a way to leave office. And then you have all these Blue Anon people who are tweeting out links to terrible things happening in Palestine right now, happening in Gaza right now, and trying to make people feel bad for not getting Harris elected, as if Trump is already president. No, this is Biden doing those things.
You know, like plenty of reasons why Trump will be terrible. Look at their plans for Medicaid, for example. He just appointed Dr. Oz to head up the department overseeing Medicaid. And Dr. Oz has talked about privatizing Medicaid. And the Trump team has hinted that they want to cut Medicaid. Those are the kind of things that, you know, where if Trump goes through with that, that will distinguish themselves from the Biden administration. But when it comes to genocide, it's the Biden administration that is responsible for that, has been facilitating that. And Jake Sullivan's proud of it.
All right. Well, for Republican suck, we actually have some good news. We have maybe we could call it some ICC. The ICC doesn't suck. The ICC, the International Criminal Court, has come out and issued arrest warrants for Benjamin Netanyahu and also former Defense Minister Yoav Gallant, as well as Hamas's Mohammed Deif, though they're not sure if he's alive. And of course, they dropped their warrants for Ismail Haniyeh and Sinwar because they were assassinated. But Republicans are really not happy about this. So let's take a look at this reaction from Tennessee Senator Marsha Blackburn. "I'm calling on the Senate to immediately pass legislation sanctioning this kangaroo court. Every individual involved in this decision to attack Israel should face severe repercussions." That's this, America First senator. America first sometimes, but Israel first other times. And she's not the only one who's upset about this. Let us take a look at Tom Cotton. "The ICC is a kangaroo court and Karim Khan is a deranged fanatic. Woe to him and anyone who tries to enforce these outlaw warrants. Let me give them all a friendly reminder. The American law on the ICC is known as the Hague Invasion Act for a reason. Think about it." The Dutch foreign minister has announced that they are ready to act on the ICC's arrest warrant, saying if Netanyahu or Gallant land, they will be arrested. So, I guess people are nervous.
Pretty amazing that this ICC warrant has come down. I was expecting it to be delayed indefinitely, just because the ICC historically has been a, tool of the West. It's known as the International Caucasian Court for reasons, because the usual targets are, for example, are like leaders in Africa, right? Not leaders of, European states like Israel. So I'm happy to be surprised. The freak out is refreshing. It's good to see people who are facilitating genocide be alarmed at some measure of accountability, although, of course, it's not nearly enough. And the people who belong in the ICC docket with Netanyahu and Gallant are his enablers. The people in the Biden administration who have armed him and facilitated the genocide for more than a year. Well, it's very rare to see any kind of accountability when it comes to war crimes, especially those perpetrated by the U.S. and its allies. So this offers a little ray of light, and we will see how it plays out. This is going to be, you know, for Netanyahu, it means he cannot travel to many more countries now. For example, France has already said that they would enforce the arrest warrant because they're, you know, under the Hague's jurisdiction. The U.S., of course, is not. So they don't, you know, Netanyahu is free to come here.
Right.
It's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, I think he may be going back and forth between the U.S. and Israel when it comes to his travel. But, you know, that is good news because, as I've mentioned before, never forget, the Netanyahus like to schlep their dirty laundry to the White House. So more trips where they get to do their laundry for free. And if there's a better metaphor for the relationship between the U.S. and Israel, I don't know about it. Well, of course, Republicans are not just enabling genocide in Palestine. They're also enabling bloodshed in Ukraine and Russia. And let's take a look at what's motivating our politicians when it comes to the war in Ukraine. Let's listen to what Lindsey Graham had to say on Fox News.
Ukraine is still standing. This war is about money. People don't talk much about it. But you know, the richest country in all of Europe for rare earth minerals is Ukraine. $2 to $7 trillion worth of minerals that are rare earth minerals, very relevant to the 21st century. Ukraine's ready to do a deal with us, not the Russians. So it's in our interest to make sure that Russia doesn't take over the place. It's the breadbasket of really the developing world. 50% of all the food going to Africa comes out of Ukraine. We can make money and have an economic relationship with Ukraine that'd be very beneficial to us with peace. So Donald Trump's going to do a deal to get our money back, to enrich ourselves with rare earth minerals, a good deal for Ukraine and us, and he's going to bring peace. And Biden's been a disaster when it comes to containing bad guys.
A disaster when it comes to containing bad guys. Not sure what he wanted Biden to do. Invade Russia single-handedly?
Yeah, or like make sure that it was like written in into the contract between Ukraine and the U.S. that like we're going to take your rare earth minerals if we give you money. I mean, is this the best that Ukraine can do? Like, it has to choose between Biden, who uses Ukraine to bleed Russia and, you know, pours in over $182 billion in U.S. spending, most of it on weapons that go to the U.S. military industrial complex, or Trump, according to Lindsey Graham, who's going to like basically make Ukraine pay the U.S. back by giving over its rare minerals. And like, this is supposed to be Ukraine's best friend and ally is right. Like, you know, it's really worth reconsidering whether if you're the Ukrainian government, whether the U.S. has your interests at heart. And if this is Trump's, if Lindsey Graham is accurately representing Trump's so-called peace plan for Ukraine, where Trump's vowing to bring peace, but it's going to be based on like ripping Ukraine off and stealing its rare earth minerals. I mean, we're in for just a lot more chaos. And Trump's plan to end the war very quickly, I don't think will be happening. But this is unfortunately the choice we get in a bipartisan system that aligns behind a proxy war. And Lindsey Graham's prescription is, on top of flooding Ukraine with weapons, let's make sure to steal whatever they have left that's of value to us, which is right. Their rare earth minerals.
Yeah. I think this is an attempt by Lindsey Graham to assuage the Republican voters who are American firsters, and also not just Republican voters who are American firsters, but people who are suffering economically and upset that the U.S. is prioritizing funding wars abroad instead of helping people here in the United States. So he's like, don't worry, we're going to get a bunch of really valuable minerals. You can feel better. You can sleep better knowing that. It's nice. It's like he no longer has to pretend that this is about democracy. It's kind of a clarifying moment.
All right. Isn't that weird? Let's turn to an act of solidarity that is attracting some controversy. This pertains to two stars from the beloved show Full House. For those who don't know it, this was a hit show aired on Fridays in the late 80s, early 90s, about a widowed father, played by the late Bob Saget, raising daughters with the help of two of his best friends. And now the spirit of friendship is, you know, on display again, because one of the actors on the show, Dave Coulier, has come down with cancer. And he received this act of solidarity from his co-star, John Stamos.
And for people who are just listening, there he is. There's John Stamos shaving his former co-star's head and appearing next to him with no hair on his head, suggesting that he had shaved his head.
But it turns out that John Stamos has not shaved his head. He's just wearing a bald cap. So, you know, this is, I've never seen this before, where in solidarity with a friend, you don't shave your own head. You just put on a bald cap.
Yeah.
Now, what's ironic about this, for those who remember the show, you know, I was a frequent viewer. One of John
Obviously,
Stamos.
Obviously, because you remember the day it was on. You remember it was a Friday show.
Sure. Of course. Well, TGIF. Yeah. One of John Stamos's catch lines on the show was whenever like one of the kids would like touch his hair, he'd go, not the hair, not the hair. So he's really, you know, being like art imitates life, or life imitates art here, in that he refuses to touch the hair. By leaving, so by putting on a bald cap.
Yeah. So maybe his friend David was like, "Would you shave your head in solidarity with me?" And he goes, "Not the hair, not the hair."
There you go. Exactly. That's exactly what happened. But really, I mean, the fact that he put on a bald cap, I mean, that's not, you know, that takes some effort too. I don't think he should be totally dismissed just because he wouldn't shave off his own hair. I mean, a bald cap is something that requires some effort.
I mean, it requires some effort maybe to put it on, but unless he wears it all the time, I don't think it counts. You got to commit to the bit. Well, Aaron, I'm going to push back on your defense of Stamos. And to do that, I'm going to show a great tweet by Dan Man Carney, who I think really captures what John Stamos is doing. So in response to the news about the ball cap, Dan Carney tweets, "Tucking my arm in my shirt out of solidarity with my friend who lost his arm."
Yeah. Well, there you have it, folks. A new cultural question is upon us. Is wearing a bald cap for your cancer-stricken friend, is that an act of solidarity, or is it just performative? This is a hot issue that I'm sure will be, you know, raging for a very long time.
Yeah. Also, a little piece of David Coulet trivia. He apparently is, you know that song You Ought to Know by Alanis Morissette? It was like her first big hit. Mm-hmm. That apparently is about him.
Well, that's the rumor. That's the question.
That's the rumor, right.
She's never confirmed who it's really about. And he is definitely one of the key suspects. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Yeah. So for Isn't That Terrible, it's so moving to know that Israeli soldiers still, even while they're committing genocide, they still have the time to have fun and enjoy life. And it's not all death and destruction. It is death and destruction for Palestinians, but for Israelis, it's life and birth. So here is footage of a soldier taking a break, as Abier Khatib wrote on Twitter, a short break from killing children to throw a gender reveal party. And there you see. And it's a boy. And what's nice about that is whether it was a boy or a girl, whether it was blue smoke or pink smoke, because of the Israeli army, either way, that child will grow up to be part of a genocidal army.
Unless they grow a conscience and leave.
Right. Or go to jail.
Yeah.
So those are your four basic food groups. Since this is a podcast, you can only hear me right now, but if you could see me, you'd be saying, "Whoa, who is that?" It's me, Katie Helper. I'm just wearing the new fashion line from American Giant. Since 2011, they've been making high-quality, long-lasting, timeless American clothes, including their classic full zip, which was named the greatest hoodie ever made by Slate Magazine. Right now, I'm wearing the very stylish Moto dress, perfect for feeling sporty and sleek, made with their soft and stretchy French terry fabric, and Aaron got the roughneck chore jacket, so he's looking good throughout his endlessly busy schedule. From activewear to work fits to the latest fashion picks, American Giant has it all. When most apparel companies have shipped too much overseas, making cheap disposable clothes and creating complicated global supply chains, American Giant stands for simple, local, high-quality goods. It's the kind of difference you'll feel and appreciate for years to come. When you buy American Giant, you create local jobs in towns that help stitch communities together. Get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com when you use the code USEFUL at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code USEFUL.
Save big on your Thanksgiving feast, all in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up with your card. Then get a juicy frozen grade A Kroger turkey for 49 cents a pound, limit one with a $25 additional purchase with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
For this week's guest, we are joined by Jeffrey Sachs. He is director of the Center for Sustainable Development at Columbia University and president of the UN Sustainable Development Solutions Network. We've had him on before. He is a wealth of insight. We're very grateful he made time for us in his very busy schedule to talk to Useful Idiots.
Yeah, and he's written so many books and he's written so many articles and he's advised so many foreign leaders and he has so much insight. And check out more about him at jeffsachs.org.
All right, let's go to our interview with Jeffrey Sachs. Jeffrey Sachs, thanks so much for joining us once again.
Oh, great to be with you guys.
It's hard to know which global disaster to start with, but why don't we be a little optimistic and start with some, what I think you'll see is positive news, which is the ICC, the International Criminal Court, issuing the actual arrest warrants that were sought a long time ago now, actually issuing them for Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli Prime Minister, and the former defense minister, Yoav Gallant. Your reaction to this?
Well, positive that the institution functions and it has done the right thing, but very grim, of course, that the ICC has indicted the Prime Minister of Israel and the former defense minister for war crimes and crimes against humanity, because this is absolutely extraordinary. I think it is not only a correct decision by the court, it's a very dramatic one. I hope that it can open some eyes in the United States. Some of the early reactions attacking the ICC, some of the senators calling this a kangaroo court and so forth are a little sad because there's an important message in this for the U.S. government. The U.S. has been complicit with Netanyahu, not only in the war in Gaza, but in many wars over the last 30 years. And I'm hoping that some people will recognize inside Washington that this is a message about Washington as well, and that we have to stop this complicity.
And what did you make of, in Washington, 18 Democratic senators joining with Bernie Sanders to vote for a measure calling for a halt to arms transfers to Israel? Of course, the measure was defeated because there was overwhelming bipartisan opposition to it. But this was a record number of senators, you know, going on record voting to halt weapons transfers to Israel, all 18 of them.
Well, yes, it's a record number, but it's shocking that the U.S. government is so enthralled to these murderous extremists in Israel that you get 18 instead of 100 votes of the U.S. Senate. It's, of course, especially tragic that the administration, the executive branch, is utterly complicit and can't lift a finger to stop anything. And again, for me, while 18 senators vote for this, the U.S. Continued to veto any path to peace in the U.N. Security Council, this time on a motion so clear, so overwhelming that even Britain parted with the United States, which is maybe once in a half century event that Britain would dare not do exactly what the United States does. But Britain voted for a ceasefire and the United States vetoed it. I just have had enough of this administration. That's been true for a long time, but I can't wait for it to leave. It's disgusting. And it is absolutely repulsive, not only in the Middle East, but in Ukraine and on so many fronts, that while there are big question marks about what's going to come, this one absolutely deserves to leave.
I was wondering if you could expand upon your comments that I heard during a recent interview with you. You said that Joe Biden is one of the worst presidents. Can you outline some of the many ways in which this is true?
Well, I'm referring especially to foreign policy. I've just never seen anything like this. The president himself and his extraordinarily weak team understand nothing about diplomacy. They have gotten us closer and closer to complete global disaster, World War III, nuclear Armageddon, whatever you want to call it. They led through their complete diplomatic failure Ukraine into a devastating war in which Ukraine has lost hundreds of thousands of people and territory for absolutely no reason, because this war never should have occurred. It could have been obviated entirely by Biden recognizing that his continued push of NATO enlargement to Ukraine was the causus belli, the reason for this war. And if he had acknowledged that and told President Putin in 2021, yeah, after all, it's a bad idea, NATO's not going to enlarge, this whole disaster could have been avoided. Of course, when it comes to the Middle East, they've been pathetic. A continued complete blank check for Netanyahu, a complete inability to say anything as a genocide is underway. So I think nothing more needs to be said about that. The ICC warrant speaks for itself, because the U.S. is completely complicit in all of the crimes that are outlined in this indictment. Then when it comes to China, I'm again amazed at the incompetence and the foolishness of it all, because this is another area I know well from firsthand experience over more than 40 years. And there is absolutely no reason we should be edging towards even this current imbecilic discussion in Washington, heading towards war by 2027 with China, a war that would be devastating for everybody and probably a devastating loss for the United States, if not for the whole world. But in any event, it shows, again, a complete failure of foreign policy. Biden, right now, we don't know whether he functions anymore, at least I don't, Blinken and Sullivan, his two top lieutenants, do function, and they function badly and have done so the whole administration. So on every major issue, I've just seen them as a failure. For me, what's amazing is he actually overtook George W. Bush Jr., in my view, as the worst of all of this, which is very hard for me to say, by the way, but he actually did. Biden has just gotten everything wrong. And now, again, we don't really know whether he's even competent to be president, because I don't hear a word from him. I don't know whether I'm just missing the short snippets, but this is not in any way a normal administration at this point. Finally, let me just add an obvious point. Before the election, the Pentagon and the White House said that using U.S. Missiles to strike deep inside of Russia was provocative, dangerous, and would not change the course of the war in Ukraine. And it was a relief. And then just a couple of weeks later, they've changed the policy. Again, not a murmur from the president, but something extraordinarily dangerous and unaccountable in terms of what kind of motivation this was or who actually made this decision. So I'd just add that to the tally of what has gone wrong.
When it comes to the motivation for this reversal from the Biden administration on the use of long-range U.S. weapons by Ukraine into Russia, we just got this from the New York Times. I'm not sure if you've seen this yet, but this is one explanation that they give. I'll quote it to you. The escalation risk of allowing Ukraine to strike Russia with U.S.-supplied weaponry has diminished with the election of Trump, Biden administration officials believe, calculating that President Putin of Russia knows he has to wait only 2 months for the new administration. So what I take from this is that the Biden, I mean, if this account from the Times does reflect the Biden administration's thinking, that they're saying that their decision to now reverse course and let Ukraine use these weapons was influenced by the fact that Trump is in office. And they're banking that, well, because Russia knows that Trump is coming in and that things are going to change, that therefore they have 2 months to escalate and, you know, see what happens.
You know, it's possible that that's how they think, and it shows what imbeciles they are. Even if that's absolutely true, it's just imbecilic. I had not seen that. But how do you bank on things when it comes to nuclear risks, to trying to understand escalation? Are they children? Are they playing some game? Is Jake Sullivan saying, well, yeah, it's probably now it's safe to do? It's for what reason? So that Biden can say, I did this, so you can blow up a few places in Russia because you think it doesn't really make a difference, or maybe it does, or who knows what? It's an interesting account, because if it's true and that's the explanation, it's absolutely absurd. Again, I've always thought of these people that if I had them in class, I'd be failing them because they're like the worst students. You just say, are you kidding? Sorry, but that's a D if I'm being generous. And that one, Aaron, is a D.
Well, listen, if you think that's a D, then let me read you this. This is also from the same article in the Times. I had to read this twice to believe it.
I have to admire you. You still read the Times. I can't even read that newspaper, by the way. But anyway,
well, it reflects what these people think. You know,
I know, no. I admit it's useful for me to understand what my neighbors think, but it is such a pile of trash that I can't read it for substance anymore. But anyway, please.
Well, let's hope that this is trash. What I'm about to read you, okay? Because listen to this. Several officials, and they're talking about U.S. and European officials, several officials have even suggested that President Biden could return nuclear weapons to Ukraine that were taken from it after the fall of the Soviet Union. That would be an instant and enormous deterrent to Russia. But such a step would be complicated and have serious implications. So according to this account from the Times, there are officials in the U.S. and Europe that are seriously contemplating putting nuclear weapons in Ukraine to restore quote unquote deterrence.
I'm speechless. I'm absolutely speechless. Is this a joke and you use the font of the New York Times to imitate the story? Or is someone supposed to look at that and say, oh, that's good. Isn't that nice? Why don't we play that game too? Again, all I can say is we need to survive a few more weeks. Because this is the most shocking, stupid administration. But by the way, it is true. There are a lot of dangerous people in Washington, and that's always true. And I've always said that the most important job of a president is to put the foot on the brakes of the war machine. It's always revving. There's always someone who wants to do something incredibly stupid. There's always the chance for escalation. And the responsibility of the president is to say no. Now, we don't know whether the president we don't know whether he has the mental apparatus right now to do this job. And if not, we don't know who's running the White House. And it's a real question, by the way, because we know that everything is lies. We have all sorts of evidence of mental incompetence right now. And so it's absolutely dramatic. But, you know, when everything is lies anyway, when the whole administration is performative narrative, when nothing is said that's truthful, when the New York Times reports garbage anyway, day in, day out, you just can't figure it out. But we used to have important decisions discussed and deliberated, at least to an extent. Now we don't even have that at all. And so that's quite a statement. Boy, let's see what happens if we give them the nukes. Zelensky's a real responsible guy. That sounds like an absolutely terrific thing to do. Maybe give it to the Azov Brigade. You know, it sounds good to me. I should clarify, because irony doesn't work very well right now. This is about the worst possible idea one can imagine, but I would not discount that somebody in Washington has it.
You're someone who has worked with these people. You've encountered very powerful people. You've been behind closed doors with them. What motivates them? And what is the most surprising thing you've ever seen or witnessed, or the most disturbing thing?
Well, first of all, there's a tremendous amount of groupthink. It's stunning. You can't walk out of that groupthink. You can't raise a doubt or a question without being excluded. So this is one point. I would say the deep state is true, which is that the U.S. has strategies that persist certainly between administrations, but really for decades. And I think that's essentially what we are witnessing right now. It has been the policy of the U.S. deep state, or the permanent security state, since around July 1945, to defeat the Soviet Union and then to defeat Russia. It wasn't more than a couple months at the end of World War II that all the U.S. guns and attention turned to the next war with our World War II ally, the Soviet Union. And I think it's shocking, the more that I have learned over my lifetime and the more that I've seen, the idea that everything was the fault of the Soviet Union and that it was Stalin doing this and Stalin doing that that set the whole Cold War in motion is absolutely false. There were just a lot of powerful people that believed that the next war was the war with Bolsheviks. These are people that were basically Nazi sympathizers before we went to war with Germany, fought Germany, but then expected the next war to continue immediately. And I say this because we went through 45 years of that Cold War. And by the time I was a bit of a grown-up, I was involved with the end of the Cold War in 1989, 1990. I became an advisor to Mikhail Gorbachev's economic team in the last year. I became a key advisor to President Yeltsin's economic team in 1991 at the end of the year, and in 1992, and so forth. I started to see this in action. I was a bit confused, I have to say, because I thought the Cold War was over. At that point, I was hearing face-to-face from Yeltsin, we want to be normal, we want to be friends, we want to do everything. And it was true, absolutely. And what Gorbachev said was true, absolutely, that there would be a common European home from Rotterdam to Vladivostok. He had the vision absolutely to end nuclear arms everywhere. Of course, as we know, that Reagan and Gorbachev almost agreed in Reykjavik in 1986 and so forth. I saw this with my own eyes. I heard it. I was involved with these people. And I saw over years how the United States said, no, that peace would mean mutual respect, that we would actually do things together. But don't you understand? The new world is we run the show. And we're not done yet. Our mission since 1945 is to defeat you. And now we need to see Russia divided. Maybe it will collapse into its ethnic pieces the same way the Soviet Union did. And we have the absurdities of our neocons who couldn't put Chechnya on a map, suddenly forming the Chechnya Friendship Committee as the CIA is running jihadists to destabilize Russia the same way that it tried to destabilize the Soviet Union, and U.S. withdrawing from nuclear arms agreements. And overthrowing governments and the color revolutions and the coups and all the rest. You just can't make this stuff up. But my point is, what I've seen is the underlying continuity of this madness. We couldn't even take yes for an answer to the end of the Cold War. We had to go all the way to this mantle, to this member Russia. And I think that's still the modus operandi of these crazy people in Washington. And they seem not to know how to stop before we really have that nuclear war, because every time we come close, they say, don't worry about that. That's their one line. Don't mention that risk. Oh, that's a bluff. That's a bluff. That's a bluff, until it's not a bluff. It's simply mind-boggling how wrong-headed all of this is, and how our government has become so closed down like a bunker that we hear nothing honest. There's no debate. There's no discussion. Congress is completely irrelevant in this. Where is the deliberation? It doesn't exist. There is no foreign policy discussion at this point of any sense at all. There isn't. And so it's all confidential, classified, behind closed doors, to the point where world-changing decisions are made, and we don't even have a clue as to how or where. It involves no legislation, no public deliberation, no debate. They just happen. And even when such decisions are made that reverse decisions that were made just weeks earlier, no discussion. So this is really a government is so dysfunctional and dangerous that it's extraordinary. I mean, did you ever think? I never thought in a million years I'd be saying, I can't wait for Donald Trump to come back to the White House. But I'm actually saying it, and I mean it.
When it comes to the lack of public input and debate, I'm reminded of the time two years ago last month, Joe Biden was speaking at a fundraiser in Manhattan. And he just casually told the room that the world's never been closer to nuclear Armageddon since the Cuban Missile Crisis. And of course, the room was alarmed, but Biden was just blurting this out as if this was totally fine, as if he was some bystander who had no ability to stop it, when he was the one fueling the proxy war in Ukraine that was fueling that very strong risk of nuclear Armageddon that he was musing about. But
and Aaron, when that happened, what was amazing was that Biden was chastised. I remember the Wall Street Journal, I think the next day, and other mainstream media chastised the president for even talking in that way. Right. You're not even supposed to mention that. Nuclear Armageddon, how dare Biden act with such indiscretion? In other words, the president had spoken out of turn. The only time we ever heard from him was when he was speaking to donors and someone caught it like this. But the reaction of the media was, stop that talk. That could scare somebody.
Yeah.
What is it that makes you look forward to Trump returning to the White House?
Well, mainly Biden leaving. This is the main point. Biden, Sullivan, and Blinken leaving is such great news. I'm a little worried. They keep coming to Columbia University. My colleagues are now Hillary Clinton and Victoria Nuland.
Oh,
so
no.
God knows what's going to happen to my university next. But we need to get them out from where they are. With Trump, there's actually been some intelligent talk about ending the war in Ukraine. This is quite notable. I actually think that's likely to happen. When it comes to the Middle East, heaven knows, because it's the Israel lobby everywhere, obviously, on all sides at all moments, and it's horrible. The only thing I'm somehow hoping is that Trump's instinct of not to be pushed around by those he doesn't want might somehow cause a moment of recognition that the U.S. is completely enthralled to Israel, and maybe he wouldn't like that. on an individual level, but the whole system is rotten in Washington to the core on this. You think the guy that was indicted by the ICC today received 58 standing ovations a few weeks ago in the U.S. Congress when this indictment was pending and all of the facts about it were known. So it shows how completely rotten and broken the political system is in this regard. When it comes to China, it's also puzzling. Of course, anti-China rhetoric is as pervasive as it is mindless and ignorant. It's another area where I'm just stunned by the complete, can I say bullshit on your show?
Yes.
Sorry. Okay. The complete bullshit every day about China. But Trump has said a couple of times that there's for him a difference of his tariffs and his trade war with the military side. That would be a breakthrough, because if you look at what is actually said these days in Washington, and again, according to people who chronologically are grownups, although they don't act like it, it is that we're preparing for war by 2027. The Navy put out its brochure, Ready for War with China by 2027. That was the latest plan. And then there was another story. I admit I read the New York Times, that story, because it caught my attention on the website. It said the Pentagon preparing for war. And so I read this story. It was, I think, a week or two ago. And it was, yes, we're preparing for war with China. And I read the whole thing top to bottom, and it just treated straightforwardly. We're preparing for war with China. So I happened to know the reporter, and I wrote to her, said, thank you for writing this, because you won't have time to write it afterwards. Well, I'll be dead in 10 minutes. So it was good that you have the World War III story up front, left it at that, and then got a response back, and the response said, I hadn't noticed, but I had written three times that the Pentagon doesn't want this war, but my editors had taken that out of my text, and I just hadn't noticed it. Okay, something's wrong. Something wow. Seriously wrong. Yeah.
Wow, that is really scary.
Yeah.
Wow. And this we just happen to know because you know about this, but imagine how frequently this happens, and we have no idea of the New York Times intervening and how the news is delivered.
By the way, when Nord Stream was blown up, and I said, rather obviously, didn't take an insider or a genius to know it. I said, you know, the United States did this. A top New York Times reporter that I happened to encounter soon afterwards said, Jeff, of course, who else? And I said, yeah, but your paper said it was probably the Russians this morning. And he looked at me and he laughed and he said, yeah, you know, the editors. It's sad. It's not only sad, it's extraordinarily worrisome, but that is the reality.
Let me ask you a domestic question. As an economist, what are you expecting from the Trump administration? Their first time in office, their signature achievement was a tax cut that many economists say favored the ultra wealthy, although Trump supporters would argue differently. And now there's talk from people close to Trump about cutting Medicaid, cutting food stamps. He's appointed Dr. Mehmet Oz to a senior position. Dr. Oz has openly advocated privatizing Medicaid. What are you expecting when it comes to Trump's domestic economic policies?
And to hear the rest of the interview, please go to usefulidiotspodcast.com.
He is such an amazing guest. He can talk about so many different things and with so much knowledge. And I feel very blessed that he gave us that interview.
I feel very blessed too. Also, he's very busy and he, you know, found time in a very hectic schedule. He's traveling right now to speak to us. So thank you, Jeffrey Sachs, as always, for joining us. And let me, you know, do a little peek under the hood. I want to own up to something. If you watch this interview closely, you might have noticed that my shirt was inside out when I asked the first question. Now, what I could have done
is re-recorded the question and pretended to be asking Jeffrey Sachs. But we don't do that on this show. We're an authentic show. We bring
media
you the real. Yeah. We show you our true selves. Nothing is kept secret. So there you go.
Is that why you got up and came back?
That's why I got up and came back.
Nice. All right. Wow. Nice little fort behind the fourth wall. Yeah.
Yeah. I had to consider, like, I was thinking as he was answering his first question, I was like, do I keep my shirt on inside out throughout the entire interview? Or do I just, do a little, do a little quick change? And yes, it's going to be for the attentive viewer will notice that my shirt looks different, but hey, it is what it is.
Yeah. And that's the nice thing about having a co-host. You can get up and walk around, change your shirt, and there's still someone there talking to the guest. So
Underrated benefit of having a co-host. Yeah.
I got your back.
Thank you, Katie. If you put your shirt on inside out, which, you know, it happens.
Yeah.
You know,
I got your back with shirted back.
That's a good one. All right. Well, thank you for having our back at Useful Idiots by supporting the show at usefulidiotspodcast.com. If you go there, you get bonus content, including the Thursday Throwdown, your midweek dose of media madness.
And we will see you next week. We're not taking off next week, so we're going to bring you an interview.
One more way in which we have your back. All right. We'll see you next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Thanks so much for listening to and watching Useful Idiots. For extended episodes, bonus content, and our weekly Thursday Throwdown episode, please subscribe at usefulidiotspodcast.com. Support the show for free by subscribing on YouTube, Rumble, and wherever you get your podcasts. If you like the podcast, don't forget to rate and review. You can also follow us on Twitter at usefulidiotpod. Thanks for supporting independent media. We'll see you next time.
Save big on your Thanksgiving feast, all in the Kroger app.
Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up with your card. Then get a juicy frozen grade A Kroger turkey for 49 cents a pound, limit one with a $25 additional purchase with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.